Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. We are hitting another quick read for today. This one is actually a continuation of a series. So the first part of this was actually way back in episode 201. So it's been a little bit, but I'm finally getting back to it. I've had it on my list, and it is by Brandon Quittam, and it's the Bitcoin Mycelium. The Bitcoin is a Decentralized Organism series, and it's a three-part series. So this will be part two. Bitcoin is a social creature. Mushroom, part two of three. So I don't even think I have anything else to cover. Actually, no, I do. The PayPod podcast, which you can find at SoarPay, SoarPay.com, actually interviews a number of people in the Bitcoin space, and I've been listening to a couple of previous interviews, and they do a really good job, and I had a ton of fun with Scott on the show, and did an interview. I think they just released it like a day or two ago, and yeah, I really just thought this was a good fun episode, particularly for more like introductory stuff, because I know I usually go into the weeds and assume that people know what Schnorr is or SegWit or, you know, all that stuff. So the interviews, I feel like, are a much better way to be introduced into the whole conversation about Bitcoin and what all this stuff is. So if you're looking for something that's more introductory and, you know, just a fun conversation with Scott, that was a really, really great episode, and I think a lot of you guys might enjoy it. So I will link to that one. I probably will have it posted on this show, maybe in the next couple of days, but I actually kind of want to direct people over to his podcast just because he's got a couple of the interviews that were really good, at least the ones that I've listened to. Definitely go check him out over at PayPod. That is SoarPay.com is where you can find that. Yeah, don't miss that interview. It's episode 42, and I'll link to it in the show notes. Without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into Brandon Quittam's part two of the series on Bitcoin as a decentralized organism with Bitcoin is a social creature. Exploring hype cycles, ethnomycology, and the cult of Satoshi. Introduction. In my last article, Bitcoin is a Decentralized Organism, link, we explored Bitcoin's decentralized architecture through the lens of mycelium. We covered the decentralized network archetype, anti-fragility, proof of work, arbitrage, Bitcoin's role in its ecology, and the merits of decentralization. However, our fungi story is not yet complete. The next stage in the fungal life cycle is to reproduce, and this all happens inside the mushroom. After reaching maturity, mushrooms release little mushroom seeds called spores capable of colonizing new territory. Although the fungi kingdom is quite alien compared to life in the animal kingdom, humans have had a relationship with mushrooms for a long time. Historically, mushrooms have represented mystery, fear, opportunity, impermanence, and to some, a cult-like reverence. In this article, we're going to explore Bitcoin as a social phenomenon through the lens of the mysterious mushroom. Disclaimer, if you're new to the fascinating world of fungi, I recommend starting with part one. Short on time, here's a condensed version, and he links to a Twitter thread of him kind of breaking down the main points. Bitcoin is a social system ratified by code. Bitcoin is made up of individual constituents, each with their own perspectives, motivations, and abilities. Collectively, they form consensus on the rules of the Bitcoin game. The code simply ratifies this social consensus. From Hasu's seminal piece, Unpacking Bitcoin's Social Contract, Quick Read 198 if you would like to listen to it. Quote, the Bitcoin protocol automates the contract that is agreed upon on the social layer, while the social layer determines the rules of Bitcoin based on the consensus of its users. They are symbiotic. Neither would be sufficient without the other. End quote. Humans are messy, emotional, predictably irrational beings. Bitcoin, being comprised of a network of humans, is no different. Section 1. Human Psychology, Hype Cycles, and the Mushroom Method. Fungi exist primarily in their mycelium form, which you can think of as an underground root system connecting trees and plants. Humans wouldn't even know mycelium exists as it stays quiet underground for the majority of its life. However, when fungi sense that conditions are favorable, temperature, humidity, etc., it sends up a mushroom above ground. These mushrooms are the sexual organs of fungi, essentially phallic spore or seed delivery systems. Before mushrooms break the ground, fungi concentrate energy into a tiny mass of cells underground called pinheads, which persist until the perfect moment. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, mushrooms explode out of the ground, doubling in size each day until reaching maturity. Fungi fact number one. Some fungi can produce mushrooms with enough force to break through asphalt. After the mushroom is fully mature, it crescendos with a release of millions of spores, mushroom seeds, before quickly decomposing back into the ground. The mushroom only lives for a few triumphant days, and most spores perish before infancy. However, a small percentage of the spores will travel nearby and form new fungal colonies. These new colonies might stay underground for several years before the reproductive cycle continues again. Fungi fact number two. Spores are lighter than air, which makes travel easy. Theoretically, spores could catch an updraft and leave Earth's orbit. Luckily, they're on a short list of biological matter capable of surviving the cold vacuum and radiation of space. Panspermia, anyone? Save your tinfoil hats for part three. Bitcoin's hype cycles parallel fungal reproduction. To the casual observer, most of Bitcoin's life is boring. Months go by with relatively little action. Then, when conditions are just right, Bitcoin explodes into life, growing massively in size and hijacking the consciousness of observers. Price goes to the, quote, moon. Media is flooded with hyperbole, and DMs from normies flood in. Then, almost as soon as it crescendos, Bitcoin fades away, dying back into obscurity as casual participants write it off as a fad, hype, or a failed experiment. Like the mushroom spores, most new users exit the ecosystem. However, a small percentage form new colonies in Bitcoin land. These bear market survivors become new holders of last resort. Unsurprisingly, the bear market narrative is driven by surface-level activity, price. Bitcoin detractors mistake the hype cycle, the mushroom, for the big picture, the mycelial network. Amnesiac pundits proudly pile on, proclaiming, Bitcoin has perished for the 335th time. Fiat maximalists take victory laps on Twitter by posting 12-month charts. Quote, you're missing the mycelium for the mushroom, end quote. Nick Carter. Rubini celebrates by hosting his third bear market barbecue. Detractors gather to roast the proverbial Bitcoin mushroom while patting each other on the back. Tweet by Saifedean Amas. Correction. Rubini hasn't been mocking Bitcoin since it was $600. He's been mocking it since it was $58. Imagine how short your attention span must be and how strong your self-delusion to gloat with vindication during every dip from $58 to $7,000. And he quoted a tweet from Nouriel Roubini, "In good company with gold, convert bond. While everyone was focused on silver and gold, Bitcoin dropped another 40%, traded below $58. End tweet. However, to be fair, Bitcoin is complicated. Many crypto people, quote-unquote, still think Bitcoin is MySpace and Ripplecoin is the standard. Unsurprisingly, most journalists don't grasp what's going on. Imagine being assigned the Bitcoin beat as a well-intentioned, run-of-the-mill journalist. While the mushroom has died, the recent hype cycle, the mycelium, Bitcoin, is thriving underground. Like a mushroom past its prime, Bitcoin exuberance decays and the price plummets. This bear market will shake out weak hands, hedge funds will fail, ICOs will give back investor money, or worse, projects will fail, and some charlatans will be exposed. However, holders, new and old, collectively go underground and quietly make Bitcoin better, building, learning, and forming alliances. Bitcoin has improved dramatically in 2018. First, Lightning Network is picking up momentum. SegWit adoption grows to around 40%, improving transaction throughput. New developers being groomed by Jimmy Song and Justin Moon. The block sets the standard for journalism in the space. Casa, Pierre, Nodal, and others make running full nodes easier. Nomix producing cleaner data than CMC. Foundations laid for inevitable financialization, Fidelity, Bakkt, etc. Schnorr signatures are being built out, tech specs, white paper, and a too long didn't read. Trace Mayer promotes proof of keys to minimize risk of hypothecation and stress test the ecosystem and remind new users about self-sovereignty. Blockstream enables Bitcoin transactions via satellite. Things get interesting when combined with mesh networks. New metrics for measuring health of cryptocurrencies emerge, such as realized cap, economic throughput, economic density in dollars per bytes, and MVRV, the market value to realized value ratio. We've passed the peak of miner centralization. Bye-bye, Bitmain. A CoinShares report says 77% of Bitcoin's energy consumption is from renewable sources. And new scribblers stand on the shoulders of giants, attempting to describe Bitcoin in novel ways. As time goes on, narratives evolve as Bitcoin continues to reveal herself, himself, itself, to curious onlookers. Eventually, the market bottoms. Holders cling together like a band of brothers, creating a strong foundation capable of sustaining future growth. Holders are the revolutionaries, Dan Held. As holders hoard more Bitcoin, the float, supply actively being traded, is increasingly constrained. With a decreasing available supply, each new user puts more upward pressure on the price. As price rises, media shines a spotlight, new users are pulled in, and before long, we're back in another hype cycle. Section 2. Mycophobia, Maria Sabina, and the Cult of Satoshi. Sometimes people say crypto can be a bit culty. This is both true and a net positive. Before we get into Bitcoin's religious tendencies, let's learn from our history with mushrooms. The modern Western world has been inflicted with mycophobia, the irrational fear of fungi. People fear what they do not understand, and let's face it, most people think mushrooms are vegetables. Mushrooms are strange. They represent the life and death cycle of impermanence that humans subconsciously fear. Facing our own mortality is no fun. Better to just avoid it. However, it hasn't always been this way. In fact, humans have had a relationship with mushrooms for a long time. From food to medicine to superstitions and religious artifacts, mushrooms can save your life, kill you, feed you, and even alter your consciousness. Anthropological evidence suggests that humans who partnered with fungi had an evolutionary advantage. As more people understand fungi and Bitcoin, they'll soon realize how important they just might be. Humans who partner with fungi have an evolutionary advantage. Ancient man relied on mushrooms to survive in the Alps of northern Italy. Ötzi, the Iceman, who died nearly 5,300 years ago, was discovered carrying two mushrooms, amadou and birch polypore, tethered on a leather strap. One of the mushrooms was used to start fires, and the other was discovered to be medicinally active against the parasite discovered in his gut. As far back as 19,000 years ago, a particularly high-status woman dubbed the Red Lady consumed mushrooms as evidenced by the spores recovered from her teeth. Whether these mushrooms were for food, religious purposes, or otherwise is unknown. One of our oldest examples of cave paintings was discovered in northern Algeria, estimated to be over 6,000 years old. This painting depicted Bee Man, who has mushrooms in his hands and growing out of his body. In Siberia, the Korak people revered the fly agaric mushroom, Amanita muscaria, which is the iconic red and white mushroom famously portrayed in the Super Mario Brothers and Alice in Wonderland. The Korak loved this mushroom so much they would drink the urine of humans and reindeer who recently consumed the mushroom. Apparently you can recycle urine in this way up to 5 times while achieving the desired effects. How they discovered this phenomenon is another question altogether. Get your tinfoil hat, as the fly agaric may have inspired our Christmas traditions, link included. The Mazatec culture from present-day Mexico revered the mushroom as sacred. Discovered relatively recently by Gordon Wasson, which he detailed in a famous article in a 1955 edition of Life magazine, many tourists have since visited this region in Mexico seeking to learn from the famous mushroom shaman, Maria Sabina, and her kin. There's a graphic of a 16th century drawing from Central America showing three mushrooms, a man eating them, and then a god behind him who is speaking through the mushroom. And then there's also a mushroom stone, which is from the highlands of Guatemala and dates back to between 300 and 600 AD. Clearly, the mushroom has captured the attention of our ancestors. Bitcoin conjures up a similar quasi-religious fervor. Described brilliantly by Yuval Noah Harari, Homo sapiens are uniquely capable of cooperating flexibly in large numbers. This enables us to collectively agree on abstract concepts such as nations, gods, and money. Just as humans form religious cults around the mushroom, one way to describe Bitcoin is a neo-money religious movement. The mystery of Satoshi created a strong foundation enabling emergent religious tendencies. Bitcoin was created through immaculate conception by a mythical character, Satoshi, who later sacrificed himself for the greater good. The cult of Satoshi inspires some fanatics to dedicate their lives to promoting the good word. Not all Bitcoiners fall into the same religious sect. Some scholars cling to the ancient religious text, white paper, while others interpret Satoshi's vision through his early forum posts. Disagreements about priorities, evidenced by the scaling debates, have led to hard forks and fractured congregations. Not unlike Martin Luther fracturing the Catholic Church by pinning the 95 Theses on the church door in 1517. Roger Ver was known as Bitcoin Jesus from his early days, spreading the good word by gifting Satoshis to fiat-afflicted restaurateurs. Messianic figures like Fake Toshi, Craig Wright, spring up claiming to be the real Satoshi Nakamoto. Fake Toshi, the fundamentalist, brands his sacrament as Satoshi's vision, the one true Bitcoin as laid out in the Bible, the white paper. Quote, the functional details are not covered in the white paper, but the source code is coming soon, end quote. Satoshi Nakamoto. Never mind how incomplete or how many errors are found in the white paper, Faketoshi claims his fork of a fork is the real Satoshi's vision. Even if Faketoshi's fork was closest to Satoshi's original vision, it wasn't. Does it even matter? The answer is no. The essence of Bitcoin is intimately tied to the ever-evolving social consensus surrounding the protocol. Each rival sect is a competing social contract. All right, let's hit our sponsor real quick. I'm going to go grab another drink, and we will come back with this section. All right, back to it. Bitcoin's social contract coalesces around a few simple rules. These agreed-upon rules, a shelling point, are then ratified in the Bitcoin protocol, automating social consensus. The rules of Bitcoin. 1. No confiscations. 2. No censorship. 3. No inflation. And 4. Anyone can verify rules 1 through 3. This is from Hasu's Bitcoin as a Social Contract. Again, episode 198 if you'd like to listen. Let's use the great scaling debate as an example. One group, Bcash, believed we should focus on cheap payments at the expense of decentralization, while the other, BTC, believed we need to prioritize decentralization on the base layer and scale payments off-chain. As a competing religious sect in a free market, the Bcash gang was free to fork the Bitcoin code and test their hypothesis. 1 year later, it's clear that the social consensus surrounding Bitcoin doesn't agree with the Bcash approach, as the market doesn't value Bcash or any other fork spawn. Detractors of Bitcoin might then say that forking Bitcoin code inflates supply. However, that's like saying when Zimbabwe prints more money, it devalues the US dollar. Hat tip to Murad Mamadov. In the case of the failed Bcash forks, they copied the code, Bitcoin protocol, but failed to mobilize the people, the social layer, resulting in an asset with relatively minimal value. A prime example of Bitcoin resisting corruption from bad actors by requiring social consensus in order to change the network. In other words, Bitcoin replaces social assumptions with mathematical assumptions. We will dive deeper into the consequences that this has on our social scalability in Part 3, coming soon. Religious fanatic behavior is an indicator of future success? We're witnessing a new scarce commodity being monetized in real time. No living person has witnessed such a phenomenon. In order to actually pull this off, the collective consciousness of the planet will need to change. Convincing people that money isn't green paper and it doesn't need to come from our government will take time. In order to overcome the inevitable adversity required to create a new global reserve currency, it might just require some religious zeal. As each new disciple converts to the cult of Satoshi, the chances of hyper-Bitcoinization increase. That being said, there are risks of over-politicizing Bitcoin. Hat tip to Hasu. Some factions of the community portray Bitcoin as a club for Austrian economists who only eat meat that they personally shot with one of their mini guns. While those things are well and fine, they are not prerequisites for being a Bitcoiner. Let's not entangle the two at the cost of repelling prospective Bitcoiners. Now, be sure to convince all your friends and family to read the New Testament, the Bitcoin Standard, at least twice before heading out on your next FUD-crushing crusade. Good cults have incentives to evangelize. Money is the ultimate network effect. Its value is determined by the number of people you can interact with. In Bitcoin, not only does it capture its users' imagination in a religious sense, there are also financial incentives to recruit new members into the congregation. With each new user that buys Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin directionally increases, benefiting previous holders. Then that new user is incentivized to convert their friends, who then convert their friends, and the cycle continues. As price increases, so do the incentives to improve security, as evidenced by the difficulty adjustment, one of Satoshi's most brilliant contributions. Price increases lead to mining becoming more profitable, which means miners contribute hash power, which means better security makes Bitcoin more valuable. The fungus is spreading. If the bear market blues make you frown, just look underground. There are countless developments, some listed above, to be optimistic about. Nick Carter, tweet: broke digital gold, woke digital slime mold. The Bitcoin fungus is quietly spreading underground. With each passing day, Bitcoin is eating more fiat, becoming more robust, more decentralized, and more lendy. Even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise. Conclusion. Did you enjoy part two? Part three is coming out soon, where we will explore Bitcoin as a catalyst for human evolution. Here's part one in case you missed it. Let's actually quick read 201 of the show if you would like to listen to that one. I'll also have the link to the full article as well as that episode in the show notes. Part 3 teaser. Bitcoin is an inevitable consequence of nature trending towards higher orders of complexity. Bitcoin as a trust-minimized communication layer will infiltrate all corners of our globe. This immutable foundation enables us to build a more socially scalable society, a requirement if we're going to coordinate on a global level to achieve new heights of human achievement. Political and environmental coordination, tracking externalities, and even becoming a multi-planet species. Follow me here on Medium and Twitter to be notified when Part 3 is released. Thanks for reading. Brandon. And he says, P.S., lots of people are asking for resources to learn more about fungi. He links to Paul Stamets on the Joe Rogan podcast, which we talked about in part one of this on episode 201, or quick read 201. So if you'd like to go back actually go to the article and check out these links, that's a really good conversation. There's the TED Talk by Paul Stamets, and he's got links to a number of other things. And of course, definitely check out his part one if you haven't done that yet. And make sure you follow him, because hopefully we will be getting part three soon. I don't think it's out, or at least I haven't seen it yet, I don't believe. Let me check real quick. I believe it's just part one and part two, but we will be hitting part three, and I'll be making these all together when it is out. Yeah, it looks like there's just part one and two for now. All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that read. I always love discussion of Bitcoin as an organism, because I really kind of think of the economy as that way. Like humans really are kind of a something that about the abstraction of the human brain creates these crazy networks that are constantly like being born and dying and being replaced. And they really are like organisms in themselves. Like, I mean, we build, blood vessels and like resource moving networks to get the right tool and the right resource from our environment, from the location that it is to the place that it is needed. It's really kind of an amazing thing when you look at humanity as if it's one thing and how it behaves and grows. And it's exactly those types of protocols that make that organization possible. It's the protocols and codes, the abstractions that we develop that allow the organization to actually be accurate, for the communication to be correct, and for basically the narrative to be close enough to what is actually going on that it becomes a useful tool for deciding what to do, for deciding how to act. And Bitcoin is one of those means of economic organization that's orders of magnitude more efficient and sustainable than as an open system where it's controlled essentially by the market and defensible against an adversary. Any money that shares those traits is something that's far more effectual at communicating value, at making sure that prices are accurate across the economy, because it's a proper measuring stick that isn't constantly being manipulated for the good of just a handful of people who happen to have the authority to manipulate it. The number of problems throughout history that have been caused by essentially poor communication of money or poor communication of value, for resources not to get where they need to go, for people in the modern world to starve simply because the money is falling apart. Think about that. Like, nothing in Venezuela, like factories didn't just, they weren't uninvented, you know, like the production, the whole production model is not, it has not changed. It's not like people suddenly became stupid and forgot how everything worked. The money fell apart and everything else fell apart with it. Literally the money is what holds, money is a tool that holds society together. Manufacturing cannot progress. You cannot do work. You cannot translate and trade my time of doing job A with your time of doing job B. We cannot cooperate in our goal of making everything, making society economically sustainable without that tool. It all falls apart. People are literally dying and like chasing down and killing cows with sticks and rocks. If you've seen the videos on YouTube, it's horrible, the crap that is happening in Venezuela. And the cause is the destruction of money. That is how critical it is for society. Nothing works without it. So it just becomes a really fascinating thought experiment to see it as, you know, a sort of a, it's like, you know, it's like your blood vessel, it's like your red blood cells not working. They no longer pick up and drop off resources where they're supposed to go. Or, you know, you don't take in oxygen properly because, you know, you have carbon monoxide filling up your receptors or whatever it is. The analogy just really sheds light on, it gives a really interesting view, like kind of a top-down view of seeing all of this as a very big, big picture thing. Is if humans were one organism, you know, like if we were working together in such a way to build an organism higher, at a higher layer than we are, what can we know about that organism? What does that organism look like? And whether or not you think of it as being true in like the real sense or just as an abstraction, it still presents an incredibly fascinating way to kind of predict the evolution and movement of something as abstract a thing as Bitcoin is. We don't really have much to go by, and I don't think, I think imagining it or thinking of it as something like a fungi, a decentralized networked organism, is not really far out of what's really happening. So again, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. A special thank you to Brandon Quittam again for this series. Always fun stuff to read. And I will see you all back here tomorrow. Do not forget to check out cryptoeconomy.life and follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy. You can find me on both of those. Don't forget to subscribe so you can get all of this great content and read or explore on cryptoeconomy.life and or on the podcast feed the hundreds of articles that we have read and covered by so many different authors in this space. Just an ocean of stuff to dive into. So go check it out. Subscribe so you don't miss the next ones, and I'll catch you all back here tomorrow. Thanks for listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. I am Guy Swan signing off. Until tomorrow, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.